100 years ago tomorrow, American painter, muralist, sculptor, and iconoclast Walter Inglis Anderson was born. His name may not leap to mind as readily as Georgia O'Keeffe, Edward Hopper, or other 20th century artists, but to those who have seen his vivid watercolors or epic murals, Walter Anderson's work is unforgettable. Anderson's creations can now be seen by a wide audience. The Smithsonian Institution has just opened a major exhibition of his art, some 160 pieces, the largest showing ever undertaken outside of his hometown of Ocean Springs, Mississippi. Linda Crocker Simmons, Corcoran Museum Curator Emeritus, is guest curator for the Walter Anderson Centennial Exhibition at the Smithsonian's Arts and Industries Building. She says that Anderson's watercolors of flora and fauna might bring to mind the work of naturalist James Audubon, but the similarity stops there.
He's not simply an illustrator. You would not use his images of frogs to give you biological information about what a bullfrog is like. He gives you his understanding of the relationship of that frog to the cosmos. He really is concerned more than with the replication of every wart on that frog, the frogginess of it, if you want to put it that way.
Blue crabs radiate an iridescent sheen. Hummingbirds face off, needling beak to beak. Menacing fish peer out of a bayou. Impossibly green frogs ascend a curtain of bulrushes. Walter Anderson took 8x10 pieces of plain typewriter paper and brought them to life with pen and brush. Walter Inglis Anderson was born in New Orleans on September 29, 1903. His mother was an artist, and she groomed her sons Peter, Walter, and Mac to be artists as well. Peter, the oldest, became a master potter, and the family business, Shearwater Pottery, was established in Ocean Springs in 1928. It's still in business today. Walter was trained at New York's Parsons Institute of Design and the Pennsylvania Academy of Fine Arts in Philadelphia. But the pressures of the family business and the lean times of the 1930s were hard on Walter. He became reclusive, often stealing away on his bicycle into the wilderness, eventually traveling to more faraway places, Texas, Florida, China, South America. In later years, Walter called himself the Islander and spent much of his time exploring the barrier islands off the Mississippi Gulf Coast, especially Horn Island. Christopher Maurer is author of the soon-to-be-published biography Fortune's Favorite Child, The Uneasy Life of Walter Anderson.
In the face of real adversity, poverty, mental illness, relative obscurity, which would have been adversity for someone else, he felt very fortunate. He felt that not only he, but that man was Fortune's favorite child. And the quote comes from a lovely passage in his Horn Island logs. If you live on an island the way he did, the tides bring you their gifts. And he went out one morning and he says in the logs, "A bleak dawn, but the sun has come out. I took a walk and found a much-needed pair of shoes that fit." Fortune's favorite child, indeed. If man refuses to allow himself to be distracted, driven wild, mad, sick, raving, he would often realize that he was Fortune's favorite child, and not simply an idle ass with an empty saddle begging to be ridden and driven. I think his life was a long meditation on the relationship of nature and art and man's role in that relationship, and he dreamed always of making the two one.
A bold oil painting of Anderson's beloved Horn Island greets visitors at the entrance to the Smithsonian exhibition. Water, trees, rocks, and waves are rendered in fluorescent orange, blue, turquoise. Patricia Pinson is curator of collections and exhibitions at the Walter Anderson Museum of Art in Ocean Springs, Mississippi, and co-curator of the Smithsonian Show.
Of course, this was his favorite place to be during the 50s and early 60s. He would go to Horn Island, which is about 14 miles long, and sometimes stay for 2 or 3 weeks camping out.
And he would observe and write and draw and paint. Out of this period of his life came Walter Anderson's famed watercolors. Pat Pinson describes a purple and turquoise-tinged painting called Rowing at Night.
He often rode at night. Sometimes it would take him 24 hours to get over to the island, depending on the weather. It's about 12 miles from the coast. It can be a very treacherous crossing at times. I think it's interesting here, he does not put his whole head in the painting, so that the emphasis is on the boat and on the rowing and on the night.
Was he pretty prolific?
Extremely. He did tens of thousands of these watercolors. Sometimes he used them to start a fire when he was cold, so was not particularly protective of them.
In the 1950s, Anderson created a massive work that covers 3,000 square feet of walls in the Ocean Springs Community Center. Biographer Christopher Maurer.
He pours into this mural all of the plants and animals that he most loves, and he worked for months on that mural. I'm not sure that anyone appreciated it. After the mural was completed, someone was running for office in Ocean Springs, and a supporter of that someone came up and said, "Look, I helped get you elected. The first thing you got to do is get some good white paint and paint over that stuff in the community center." And the word she used wasn't stuff. And Walter Anderson was not embittered, but really wounded.
It sounds like the people of Ocean Springs, though, were not quite sure what they had in their midst.
It took them a while to realize that, that he had given them something as splendid as a Renaissance palace, you know, in this ordinary cinder block town meeting hall.
Anderson also painted a mural for the Ocean Springs High School, depicting Ocean Springs past and present. The thin, stylized, Giacometti-like figures of Biloxi Indians and waves cresting in perfect spirals fire the imagination, a reflection of Anderson's strong belief in the role of art and literature for children. On a smaller scale, he wrote children's stories and fairy tales, often with illustrations depicting one of his favorite animals.
This is a story about Robinson the cat. There were lots of cats around the Anderson place. He loved cats, and so he created this story for his children about a cat who drank some magic milk and became a very well-known and a very precocious pianist.
The real cat that inspired that book was named Anderson.
Walter Anderson's daughters, Mary Anderson Pickard and Leif Anderson, recalled the Robinson stories.
And he was a pitiful little scrawny nothing cat who came. My father found him on the side of the road and brought him home. And the terrible thing about him was that he was incontinent. And my mother wanted him outside, but that cat would get in and he would walk on the piano at night.
That was the inspiration, perhaps.
Life was not easy for Walter Anderson's wife and children. Walter suffered a nervous breakdown and was hospitalized in the late 1930s. He was variously diagnosed with depression and schizophrenia. Biographer Christopher Maurer says the effect on his family was devastating.
They were a very brave group of people. They coped with it. They helped him to readjust. They were told by the psychiatrist that what he needed was freedom.
This is a portrait we're standing in front of, his wife, Sissy, at table. Describe her to us, Patricia.
She's sitting leaning on her elbow. She has on a red blouse, and she has
Agnes Grinstead Anderson, known as Sissy, and her children, gave Walter the freedom and space he needed to create. For the last 15 years of his life, Walter Anderson spent much of his time alone in his cottage or out on his fabled trips to Horn Island, while Sissy stayed at home and took a teaching job to support the family.
She was the stabilizing force in his life. She allowed him to be a painter throughout his life rather than having him try to conform into that role of husband and breadwinner, which he found very difficult to sustain. But then he needed the space, and so they were willing to give him that space to become the artist that he was.
Christopher Maurer, Walter Anderson died in 1965. He was 62 years old. What's his legacy? How will he be remembered?
I think he'll be remembered in art historical terms as one of the greatest watercolorists and muralists that we've ever had. And I think beyond art history, his life has a more intense meaning. We need Walter Anderson because he's an enemy of custom, because he left us this thought. Man begins by saying, of course, before any of his senses have the chance to come to our aid with wonder or surprise. Walter Anderson is an invitation to wonder, to surprise. He makes us look at the world in a new way. We can no longer be indifferent to certain flowers, plants. We look at them through his eyes. I believe that's the mark of a great painter.
Christopher Maurer, his book, Fortune's Favorite Child, The Uneasy Life of Walter Anderson, will be published by the University Press of Mississippi in November. The Walter Inglis Anderson Centennial Traveling Exhibition, Everything I See is New and Strange, is on view at the Smithsonian's Arts and Industries Building through January 11th here in Washington. It then travels to Memphis and returns to Ocean Springs in April. A gallery of Walter Anderson's work can be seen on our website at npr.org. Our feature was produced by Ned Wharton and engineered by Chris Nelson and Neil Tivolt.